Welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. Joining me as always, Dayana Yoakum, our resident personal finance expert here at the Motley Fool. Dayana, welcome.
Thank you, David.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Let's go to Arizona. Let's go to Scottsdale, Arizona, where it's probably hot this time of year. Hi, Farshid, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Is it hot this time of year?
It is. It's balmy, I call it, this time of year. It's about 106.
Oh, sounds very balmy. How about your financial life? Is it that hot?
My financial life is better than 17 years of residency and medical school, so it's hotter than it used to be.
Okay, I understand.
Comparatively, it's okay.
But you did that with the knowledge that you will get paid back over time. I'm sure you're entering a lucrative field. What is the field, by the way?
I'm in urology. It's urologic surgery.
Absolutely. I'm gonna have a question about that later, a technology question, but let's first invite Farshid's financial question.
I just wanted to say something about urology. It's always a conversation starter at a party, isn't it?
Why did you do it? Is the number one question I get?
Really, really. And what is the answer that you've come up with for that?
The answer actually is just one person. His name is Donald Skinner, who's this famous urologist from Southern California, and chairman of the department where I went to medical school. And he's such a strong influence. That's why I went to urology.
Mm-hmm.
Comes down to that one thing.
Thank goodness
you know,
for Dr. Skinner.
It is, in fact, our mentors who often guide where we end up.
Mm-hmm.
Farshid, what's on your mind here?
Well, I've just become a partner with a group of urologists, and the group has a profit-sharing program. And you get to choose where you allocate your funds. My concern is I don't have much experience with investment firms,
okay,
and I just wanted to know what would be a prudent way of deciding where to put my money.
What?
In terms of deciding which fund to go with, which investing company to go with.
Mm-hmm. So you are being presented a plan that all of your fellow doctors are involved in.
That's right.
And within that plan, you have a number of choices.
That's exactly correct.
Usually there's a single, maybe it's a bank that offers a plan, and then you can choose a number of investments underneath it. But you have a choice of choosing among different providers?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
And you can also invest the money directly into the stock market. If you like a company, you could buy stock only in that company.
Wow.
The only caveat is you cannot, basically you cannot take any dividends out till after you retire.
Okay.
So this is a very free-flowing, very
mm-hmm.
wide-open plan relative to what a lot of corporate America is used to. I'm just going to throw out two things that I think you should be thinking about, Farshid.
Okay.
The first is that the main decision about one provider against another, for me anyway, would largely come down to the fee being charged between one and another. So, you know, looking at the annual fee, often it's expressed in percentage terms, 1%, 0.5%. I mean, I would very highly weight the low-cost provider of service here versus the others, unless I saw a very clear reason that I'd be paying these other guys 0.25% more. It might not sound like a lot, 0.25%, but when we talk about thousands of dollars over the course of time, it does matter.
Absolutely.
Now, Farshid, the fee conundrum here, it is very important. Often it's very hard to figure out, and you might need to call someone up and ask questions. How do you express your fees? What are they? But like David said, this is the number one, this is the first important question for you to ask.
Right.
And so I got that down. What's the next?
Okay, and then the second one is we have to think in terms of how long you're going to be investing this savings. And I'm assuming that number is quite a long time. Maybe it's probably more than a decade.
I would tell from the experience in the group it's about 25 to 30 years.
That's right. So, and I think that's actually kind of a comforting thought. A lot of us don't have that sort of stability in our career planning, and we end up having to roll over our retirement plan into something else and make these other decisions. But the security and stability of thinking in terms of being a member of a group for 2-3 decades makes it easier for us to determine how you should be invested. I think the way I'd invest it is I would be heavily weighted in stocks. I'm not saying actually owning individual stocks because it doesn't sound like you're there or have the time necessarily or the inclination. But by choosing the stock fund, the aggressive growth fund, a portion of it, if there's a phrase like that, or the index fund, which is just sort of the generic stock market fund for a very low fee, you kind of own the American stock market average. If you own that over the course of time, you are in effect, you know, you're owning a fund that holds a bunch of different stocks, which means you're an owner of corporate America and increasingly global corporations. And it's better to be an owner than a lender. It's better to take a little extra risk over a long period of time with stocks and stock funds than with a lot of the other alternatives you'll be presented, like bond funds and others. Those make sense later in life, but not where you are right now.
Sounds great.
Now, with any fund to close, with any fund to choose from, I would select, you know, the index fund over some, not that this is part of the plan, but over some hedge fund. That is, over something that has a lower requirement of what it has to disclose, you know, what is actually in this fund and how is it being managed. The reason we like the index fund a lot is because I know exactly what's in the fund. Let's say it's the top 500 companies in America. There's no questions about how it's being managed, and I can relate to that and understand that. I think that's an important thing for you and for anybody. A lot of us overlook the importance of understanding what we're invested in.
And I appreciate that. It sounds like what you're suggesting is stability, and that's what I want. I don't want to make a lot of profit. I want to have a very secure future with where I put my money, and what you're telling me is going to get me exactly there.
Well, I do believe it, but I need to put in one caveat there myself then, which is that when you are invested in a stock fund, in that S&P 500 index fund, the 500 largest companies in America fund, you do need to understand that stocks are more volatile. So average return over the course of the years is usually 10% or so, but some years you're down 20%, and other years you're up 30%. It all averages out in the end to that, you know, 10% or so average, and stacking that up 10% year in, year out over 30 years is a really nice return by the end of it. But you do have to understand that sometimes you'll look and go, whoa, I just lost a third of my money over the last year and a half. And you have to be okay with that.
I am. I'm going to be okay with that because this money is being pulled and I can't touch it. I can't do anything with it once it's invested.
That's
so,
you know, that reminds me
of the young Frankenstein. Remember young Frankenstein? Gene Wilder says, listen, I'm going to go in with the monster here. And no matter what, close the door and don't open it no matter what I say or do.
That's right.
Yeah. And so he goes in and within about 15 seconds, as we all recall, he's screaming, get me out of here. Sometimes it's good to be straitjacketed or locked in a room away from our money so that we aren't panicking and trying to do the wrong thing, i.e. sell at the bottom when the stock market drops. So I'm kind of glad to hear that you've been put in the room with the monster here.
If you put it that way, I'll have my precautionary measures taken.
Farshid, thank you very much for the
call. Thank you.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Dennis is on the line. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine, thanks. What's on your mind?
I got interested in DreamWorks when they had their initial public offering, and I think I bought in the second day. The price kind of doubled from their opening, and I was pretty excited about it. And then things just kind of deteriorated, and now I find myself with the stock worth about half of what I paid for it, and there's indications about a class action lawsuit. I don't know. And I'm just, you know, I was in hopes that the company would, you know, they produce excellent films and mm-hmm. they're kind of family oriented, and I thought it might be a good long-term option. And I'm just wondering what your advice might be, whether I should cut my losses at this point or just kind of hang in there and kind of weather the storm.
This is a stock that I do recommend today. And part of it is, Dennis, because this company has been just crushed. The stock has been cut in half, and that's why it starts to become attractive to me at these prices. So the feeling that you're having of, gosh, I was in there at the beginning, I've held, it did well, and now it's down, that feeling, that human feeling that makes us want to just get out of it and find something better, that's often where I start getting interested in a stock.
Really?
And so that's where I am personally right now with DreamWorks Animation. We need to make it very clear. DreamWorks Animation is the public company. DWA is the ticker symbol. Recently, there were talks about DreamWorks possibly being acquired, and that created some confusion. But what's being discussed to be acquired is not what made Madagascar and Shrek. That's the company that you and I are talking about that you own a little bit of, Dennis.
Right.
That other DreamWorks recent discussion has nothing to do with this animation studio, which competes head-to-head with Pixar, which is the real class of this industry.
And the problems that the company has been having lately are some missed estimates as far as sales of Shrek 2 DVDs.
That's right. That's what really hurt the stock is that the company said, it thought, first of all, and then said its thoughts, that Shrek 2 would sell a lot. And you know what? It did. But it didn't sell as much as the company had led Wall Street to believe. So so when all of a sudden the company came out and said, guess what? We're not going to hit our numbers this quarter. We did not. We may have sold millions and millions, but we didn't sell a million or two more than that. That's what really hurt the stock. And that's what's happened with DreamWorks Animation. But the reason to close, the reason that I think you should continue to hold the stock, and I would even consider adding at these prices, is that DreamWorks Animation is a very robust and vital business. They're good at what they do. I actually own Pixar and like Pixar even a little bit more than DreamWorks. But the fact is they're both very similar today. DreamWorks will be coming out with Shrek 3. And a lot of other exciting possibilities in the future. They're already working on these projects, and they're cranking out two a year, they're saying, where Pixar is still about one a year. So DreamWorks is trying to be more aggressive in this space even than Pixar is. The reality is these movie properties are still cranking out nine-digit figures in terms of their sales, and it's very profitable. So that's why I like this company, and because it's fallen on hard times, I think I like the stock now at present prices.
Well, I appreciate the advice.
Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate you calling.
You bet.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Give us a call with your financial questions and comments. Let's go to Miami, Florida, and Doug is on the line. Doug, welcome.
I appreciate your call.
Thanks for joining us. What's your question?
Well, in 97, I bought a considerable amount of stock in the Cheesecake Factory. I really liked the operation. I just sold a restaurant myself, and I just thought it was a great idea.
Hmm.
And it's done very well. At that time, they had 9 restaurants. Today, they have 90.
Mm-hmm.
And my stock is up, well, about fivefold over what I paid for it. And they do this splitting every 2 years, 3 for 2, and that really adds up to additional shares. My broker has recommended that I sell some of it, that this is now 2/3 of my portfolio, and it's just too big a chunk of money in one industry. And I was hesitant to do that. The only reason it's 2/3 is that it's the only thing that's really done well.
Mm-hmm.
And why should I diversify into things that aren't doing as well? So my question is just, is that a good strategy to diversify? Or if you've got a winner, should you just stick with it?
This is a great portion size question here. got a portfolio here that seems a little bit weighted towards one course, and that is at the Cheesecake Factory. I'll stop with the stupid restaurant analogies now, and we'll actually talk Cheesecake Factory.
Cheesecake Factory is an amazing company. Out of all the restaurant business, this is the number one company in terms of each location and the value they can derive from that location, cranking out about $11 million a year per location. So, I mean, these are... In fact, I was reading an article on our website the other day, and I think it was something like Cheesecake Cash Factory or Cash Cake Factory, or there was some pun going on there with cash and cheese, because in fact this company is a very successful per unit company. And you mentioned, Doug, that you are formerly of this business, or maybe still in it in some way, shape, or form. What did you see that you liked about Cheesecake Factory 8 years ago when you bought the stock?
Well, the portions were huge. I mean, they just did a wonderful job of presentation. And yet it's moderately priced. And in my experience, was if you're a moderately priced restaurant, even in bad times, people will come to you. People will downgrade from a more expensive restaurant to yours, so you don't have to worry about, you know, fluctuations in business, things like that.
Well, it's been very well managed, and you've been very good, because I think while any of us can find a winner, a lot of the test of good investing is, can you hold on to it? And I think a lot of us will look back on our investment careers, and often the ones that got away were the ones we sold too early. So I congratulate you on being patient and holding through an incredibly turbulent 8 years for the stock market. Now you're at a different stage. You have to ask yourself the question, what do I want my portfolio to look like, let's say, in 5 or 10 years? You've allowed one stock to run rampant and roughshod over the rest of your portfolio, and that's because it did so well, and maybe other things didn't, and I can understand that. And that does happen to us in life if we find one big winner. That can happen. But I guess I probably come down somewhere between you and your broker on this. And that's because, on the one hand, you showed a lot more patience than many brokers allow their customers to show by consistently holding this. At the same time, you mentioned, did you say it was 2/3 of your overall portfolio now?
It is. It is that now, yes.
And so at this point, I would say you're starting to run the risk of being very vulnerable to a bad showing, let's say, or any mismanagement that might occur, or just even if this company has matured, let's say, and it's harder to find more growth for the next 90 restaurants, you might start underperforming the market by being overloaded in one stock. So I think what I'm going to suggest to you is that you take your broker's advice up to a point. And that is that I would probably take a portion that you're comfortable with, whatever amount. Maybe it's 5% or 10% per year. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd just systematically sell that. And what that means is, if it's outside of an IRA, it means you'll be paying a little capital gains tax every year, which, by the way, usually shows that we've made successful investments. So I don't mind paying capital gains taxes in that way, although, of course, I'd always like to pay less. But then I'd take that 5 or 10% and I would just start cycling it into other companies that you know well. I think you said, did you say, Doug, that this has been your one good stock?
Well, everything else has performed all right, but this is the outstanding one.
Well, if everything else has performed all right, then it's not like you lack confidence investing in other things. I mean, if you wanted for ideas and really didn't feel like there was anything else out there for you, that's one thing. But if you feel as if you could take 5% of your Cheesecake Holdings out each year and start moving it into other companies and you feel comfortable with that, I would suggest you do that. It's not an exaggerated or extreme thing, right? I mean, you're only taking one out of every $20 right now that you have in Cheesecake Factory and just selling that and redeploying. And if you do that on a systematic basis, you'll kind of smooth your diversification, which is the way I like to do it personally.
Okay. Doug, I want to go back to something you said about portion sizes at Cheesecake Factory. As a former restaurant owner, do such portions make economic sense?
Well, of course, they encourage people to share. And I usually end up getting appetizers or something like that. But it certainly brings people in. I think it's impressive.
Mm-hmm. So even if all the food isn't being consumed, it's knowing that it's going to be there, like the sandwich that's the size of your head.
Well, you see a lot of the to-go bags, and that's good advertising, too, leaving the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So people do take it with them.
Doug, good luck to you, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up the Fool Phones for this week. The Fool Phone lines are always open for your financial questions and comments. Give us a call anytime during the week, 866-NPR-FOOL.